On behalf of the entire Perry clan, we want to express to you our deepest appreciation for the support you've given us over the past few weeks, even months, but in particular these past weeks upon my mother's death. It has been overwhelming to see that outpouring and to be the recipient of it, and it certainly has changed perspective for me. I really thought that having done what I've done for as long as I've done it, that I would have a full awareness of what most of the experience feels like. And I have learned that that is simply not true. There is no way to really know until you stand in that position where you are the one that has experienced the loss. It is unique. I've always said that. I've always known that to be true, but I know it now in a way I haven't before. And so we appreciate the support you've given because it's made that process of awareness and reality easier for us to embrace and to deal with. Dad is still here. He is with us. He came home with us last week, and we were able to go and spend the weekend last weekend with the boys at the farm hunting, and that was good, and it was an escape, and for the most part, it was a time that we really didn't think about reality much. But you have to come home, and so home we came, and someone said, "Are you ready to be back in it?" And I said, "Yes," and then I got back in it, and I said, "You know, I'm not ready, and I don't know what to do about that. I need to be here. I need to do what I've been called to do, and I need to do it to the best of my ability. But I need to confess to you, and I need you to understand that I'm not right, and I'm not 100%. I feel bad a lot of times these days. I'm overly emotional, and I hate that. I don't like being out of control of my faculties. And even when I am, I like having a measure of control when I decide I'm not going to be that way anymore. I don't feel sad all the time. I'm not depressed. I'm not beaten down. I just don't feel like doing anything. I don't have any motivation, and I don't have any focus. I try to sit down and read, and my thoughts drift away. In fact, I stand before you today with an unprepared message, and I'm doing it just to, because I didn't know what else to do other than to share from my heart. And so that's what this is. This is just a free-form sharing from my heart. I want you to know that I know that when you go through these things, as so many of you have already experienced them, I understand the feelings that you have, but I think a lot of times I have the idea, or I get the sense, even from what people say to me directly, that there is this idea that if you're a Christian, that you're not going to be sad, or you're not going to be depressed, or you're not going to feel bad. And if you do, it's because your faith is weak. And I'm telling you, I don't know that my faith has ever been stronger, and I don't know that I've ever felt worse. And I don't see the two as mutually exclusive. I think this is just how it's supposed to be. I think that being a person of faith doesn't insulate us from the reality of loss or the feelings that are associated with them. And I think to suggest that it would is at the very least ill-informed and at the worst ignorant of truth. I think that the reality is that Christians experience loss the same as everyone else, except we have hope. Hope doesn't mean that you're not still sad. I'm sad. The reality is that I lost my mother about 3.5 years ago. My mother stopped being the one woman that I had known her to be for most of my life. She no longer engaged conversation like she did before. She no longer initiated it. She didn't ask questions. She didn't offer suggestions. She had no more advice to give. Her mental state had declined to a point where she was just not able to do that. She carried on conversation. She was happy. She was pleasant. She had the same personality traits that she did before. But she was limited. And with time, she would forget that we'd had that conversation. She no longer remembered the birthdays of her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She no longer even was aware of those things. She didn't have Alzheimer's. She had dementia. And dementia was brought on from years of physical decline brought about by a disease. The disease was rheumatoid arthritis. She's had the disease exactly the same number of years I've had life. When I was born was when rheumatoid arthritis became active in her life, in her body. And so for 57 years, she dealt with rheumatoid arthritis. Sometimes the reason that she was feeling bad and the reason that she had limitations was because the disease had taken a toll on her, because it does that, and it's a horrific disease. And sometimes it was because of the effects of the medications that had been used over the many years to combat the disease that took a toll on her. Either way, when she got to that stage of life, she just no longer had much left. So we didn't have that conversation. She no longer called me. My mom hasn't called me in 3 years. Mom would call me. If I didn't call her, she would call me. That was always the way of it. Now, my dad only calls me when something's wrong. But my mom would call me to see how I was. And it was just something. Yeah, I never minded getting a call from mom. I always hate getting them from dad. He'll be here in the second service, and I won't say all this. And if you tell him, I'm going to lie and say I didn't say it. Sadly, he'll probably believe you. So I really didn't have her for those years, and we knew it. So what did we do? Well, we shifted gears, and we became caregivers. And we became administrators and managers, and we did things for them, and we helped out. That gave me something to do, and it allowed me a sense of control. And so even though I knew that this was happening, and in my mind I could see it, and I felt it, and at times it made me sad, we just sort of pushed that aside and went on. When mom died, I realized that my grief wasn't for who she was at the time of her death, for she was but a shell of the woman I had known. My grief was for the years that I'd already experienced loss but not acknowledged it. And then suddenly it just kind of came rushing in on me, and I was overwhelmed. But then there was my dad, and he needed me, and he needed my help. And so we sort of pushed that down too, and we stepped up. At her funeral service, the conversation that he and mom had had during the 4 weeks that she was at home, and she only had 4 weeks since May 23rd that she was at home, and only three of those were any good, but they talked about what happens when one of them goes, and they decided, and mom said, I just want the Perry boys to do my service. And so that's what we did. Justin and Bradley and I did the service. Kathy played. It was kind of like what you experience, all Perrys all the time, and everybody's sick of it. And the boys did such a good job. I don't know if it was harder for me to preach my mother's funeral service or whether it was harder for me to watch my boys. Probably watching the boys. They just did such a good job. She was so proud of them. But we got it done, and God gave us grace. And even the message itself came from an inspired moment when we were at the hospital with her. When I knew mom wasn't going to get better, and I didn't know during that whole course of the time whether she could or couldn't. But on Tuesday, after she'd been there since the previous Thursday, it was apparent to me she wasn't going to get better. We came back to the hospital after lunch. Dad had stayed. He didn't go with us to lunch that day. And I took Kathy up to the door, and I said, I can't go back and sit the rest of the afternoon in there. I just can't. I'd done it now for 5 days, and I just couldn't do it anymore. It drives me crazy. Sitting around in the hospital room is the worst. And those of you who've done it for long periods of time, you know how hard that is. And it's like I feel like a caged lion when I'm doing that. But I needed to be there. I needed to do it. And so I had done it, and I couldn't do it anymore. And she looked at me, and she said, then don't go in. Go somewhere else. I said, where am I going to go? She said, I don't care. Go back to the room and take a nap. Go down the street. Go find a store that sells guns. Whatever you want to do, go do something else. And I drove around, and I just sort of aimlessly drove up and down University and Little Rock and kind of looked around. And then I ended up at the motel, and I thought, well, I'll go back in and take a nap. And I laid down. I wasn't sleepy, and I couldn't nap. And I kept hearing the verse, my grace is sufficient for you. Just kept hearing it over and over. And I broke down, and I wept, and I was reminded that the grace of God is sufficient, but I also took it to be the affirmation that Mom wasn't going to get better. This was it. We were done. The next morning, the doctors all came in. We'd been talking to them for days, trying to find out what direction to go, what we needed to do. Mom had become more and more unresponsive. The bleed in her brain and the neurological effects of her of that on her were just beyond what she could recover from. And so they came in, and the three doctors, her internist, her cardiologist, and her neurosurgeon, told us that they felt that the best thing for us to do was to take her to hospice and let nature take its course. So that's what we did. It took a long time to get all that together, but I remember after they said it, I'd been saying this to them, is this what we need to do? Is this our next step? Knowing that it probably was. Trying to get them to come talk to us, and they had been putting me off or not coming in, and I know that they were just trying to allow enough time to go through the necessary protocols to be sure that if she could recover, she had every opportunity and the support necessary to do it, and we wanted that by all means, but it became so clear to us that that wasn't going to be the case. And they came in, and when they said what I already knew, it was devastating to me. There was no new information, and what they said to me was what I had been saying to them for the last 48 hours, and yet when they said it, it was just like all the air rushed out of me. We gathered up everything, and we got the ambulance there later that night, and we drove down to a place called Williamson Hospice House in El Dorado. What a beautiful, fantastic facility. If I was ever going to do another type of ministry other than preaching, this is what I would do. This place, every community needs a place like this with people like that. And I know our hospice programs and in-home care, they do a great job, but this facility is devoted solely to the care of the dying and the families who support them. And my goodness, what a great job they did. It was perfect. It was really perfect. We got Mom settled in Thursday morning. We came back, and then Monday she had an episode that looked like everything had turned. We went back down there. No, Monday night she was the same. Tuesday she was the same. Tuesday night we went back home. It was late, and some of the church folk had come and stayed with Dad. Dad wouldn't leave, And so Beth, my sister, and Kathy and I were there. We'd gone to a movie just to get a little break. And then we came back over to the hospice house and visited for a while and stayed with him. And we all sensed that maybe something was changing, but there was no real clear evidence in her vitals or anything like that. And so we went home. We spent the night. Dad called about 5:20 that morning, got in the car and went back. She was gone. She'd passed away while he was sitting next to her chair. He'd fallen asleep. He said he woke up and she was gone. And so we went back over. On the way over, I told Kathy, I said, you know, the one Wednesday morning that I was going to sleep in, look at this, 5:45, I'm driving down the road. It's just like Wednesday morning Bible study all over again. As all of that just became such a reality for us, and as we kind of stepped through it, you know, you just do what you need to do. And you all know what that's like. So many of you have been down this path. You do what you have to do. And even there have been so many times that you've said to me, hey, what's my next step? And I've told you what you need to do next. I know all this stuff. But it's different when the path is yours. As I thought about today and I thought about all of this, and I wanted you to know that, I want you to know, number one, how grateful I am for you. And that's going to be what we're going to end with here, is a focus on gratitude and thankfulness, given that this is the Thanksgiving season. And number two, I want you to know how grateful I am to God for His grace, because just because of this experience and its difficulty, that does not mean that in any shape, form, or fashion we have doubted the grace of God. Quite the contrary, and the exact opposite, in fact. We have seen and have experienced the outpouring of His grace. Now, I want you to know that grace and sadness do go together. And they do work together. You can be filled with grace and joy and glory and power and purpose, and you can be sad at the same time. And so I want you to know that. It doesn't mean that you don't have faith. It just means that this is the season of life that we are in, and it's the reality of it. And so I want you to know that. I want you to know that it's going to take me a little time. I'm not going to try to deny. So many of you said, how are you doing? Because we don't know what else to say to someone like this, do we? How am I doing? And what do I say to you? Oh, I'm doing okay. I'm not doing okay, all right? I'm doing what I need to do. I'm doing what I have to do. And that's okay. The focus will return, and the healing will happen, and we'll continue the path together. But for now, no, I'm not okay. I'm still struggling to get my act together. I am really grateful for Craig and for the way that he has given leadership in our absence, and for the confidence that we've had to be away and to know that everything is solid. And he and Brad and Mary Ann and Marilyn and all of our staff, they've just done a fantastic job, as I knew they would. But as I thought about today, I thought about how grateful I was. I go back to a verse all the time that is my life verse. The verse is Philippians 4:13 that says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So I go back to that. But what I don't go back to is the context of that verse very often, and this time I did. In verse 14, it says, it was kind of you to share my trouble. I thought of that. It just overwhelmed me, the sense of appreciation that Paul had to the Philippians, because they had been a partner with him in ministry and in hardship. And that's who we are. I talked with a church member, not our church, but another church, while we were in Arkansas. And this person was sharing some of the struggles and some of the difficulties and the problems that go along with this. And then we had an opportunity, we got back, we were with a friend from northern Missouri, and he was sharing some of the problems and struggles that they were having too in their church. And there was this constant conversation sometimes about us and them. So the pastors were us and the church members were them. I want you to know there's no us and them here. There hasn't been for me for a long time, and I hope there isn't for you. There's just us. We're all us. None of you are them to me. You are family to me. Jesus, when he looked out on his disciples, said to his own family, these are my brothers and sisters. These are my mother, my father. Takes nothing away from the primary family members that I have, but you are as close to me and I feel as close to you as to any family. This is why I wanted to be here, because I needed to come home. I needed to be with you. it reminds me how grateful I am that it was you that shared our trouble. Paul said, "You Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again." He had a sense of appreciation, but he also said, "You adapted with me. Nobody else was partnering in this. Nobody else was helping in this. Nobody else was doing this. You alone were willing to do this." And there was an adaptation that took place. You adjusted, and we adjusted together. That's what we're doing. We're adjusting. We're adapting. We're changing. We're growing. This experience is just a natural progression in the cycle of life and in the cycle and circle of relationships that we share. And so while I've walked this path with many of you, as your loved ones have passed away, you now walk it with me. And so we are sharing this together. It is very normal. Are you the same when it is done? You are not. I don't ever expect to be the same again. I expect the elements that make me who I am to remain, and I expect them that they are present even now. And I expect the joy and the sense of focus and direction and vision and leadership that I've always known, I expect that to return, or at least to come back in a way that will be more what we are accustomed to. But I'll never be the same. I am forever changed. So are you. Experiences of life that bring blessing and that bring challenge and that add to us or take from us, those change us. And so what he was talking about was that while not anybody else was willing to participate, we adjusted, we adapted, and we changed. We grew. And we did that together. I think that that's what we're doing right now. I'm grateful for you, and I'm grateful for the changes that God is bringing about. This was a necessary step. This was a necessary conclusion to a life well lived. And it was one that comes to us all. It is as natural as birth itself. There's nothing bad about it. And the sadness is only the expression or the evidence and fruit of the joy and love that we've experienced in the relationship. If you weren't sad, then either you're denying what you feel or you never had much of a relationship to begin with. And so I am grateful for that relationship. I am grateful for that which I have with you. And I'm grateful for the way God is leading us through this transition and this change. Paul said in verse 17, "I'm not seeking a gift. I seek the fruit that increases to your credit." This is a really intriguing statement to me. He said that he wasn't seeking anything from the people that he was in partnership with. He was seeking the evidence of the fruit, the change, the transformation. I thought about that in relationship to this. Whenever we face something that is painful and hard, our natural inclination is either to push it away, deny it, or run from it. And when we do that, we're denying ourselves the benefit of something that can bring about a very meaningful and positive change in who we are. It teaches us a deeper awareness and understanding of God's grace. It brings us into a moment where we experience that in an overwhelming fashion that is really unlike anything else. There's no way to experience the kinds of things that I have felt over the course of the past few weeks apart from the depth of this pain. When we were at the funeral service, Kelly and Tammy came down, and most of you know that we've been best friends for many years, and so that was, I knew they were doing that. I had talked to him. I had to give Kelly directions. He couldn't get there. And I knew that Fred and Yvette were coming down, and so that was all good. But when we were standing in line at the church, and I was so grateful to have them, and so many of you had called, and we had flowers, and we had the contributions to Hospice House, and I'd gotten text messages and just hundreds of responses on Facebook, and it was just all so, so good. But I looked up, and there was Ted and Sonia standing in line at the church, and I had no idea that they were coming, and I just broke. up to that point, I'd been pretty solid, and you know, and I got up on that morning. Dad was feeling just really, really awful, and just sitting in the chair and crying the whole time. And I said, "Let's go. We got to get out of here and go to the church and get you among people, and because he does better when he's with people." And so we got up and we got out, and so I'd been busy just getting everything done and making sure everybody did what they were supposed to and was going to be where they were supposed to and all that stuff. And when I saw them, it was just like everything just kind of fell apart. And it was almost like they were representative of this entire church family in that moment. I don't even know how to describe it. It was so good to have that support, to have the familiarity of people that were holding on and loving us, caring for us, and having those couples there. I saw Holloways and McDougals that I haven't seen in years. That's on my mother's side of the family. And it was nice to see them. I don't have a relationship with those people. But the relationships that I have with you and with those who came to us during that time, those relationships, those are deep. That means something to me. I am so grateful for that. That changed me, and it changes you. It changes us. Paul said that what he's looking for is a transformation that comes as a result of our experiences in life. So I don't want you to sweep away or run from or be afraid of any of the relationships or the experiences that come as a result of them. I want you to know that God said, "I will bring good from everything." God works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And I believe that's what this is. Paul said, "I want to see that fruit come in our lives." I'm grateful for that. He said, "I have received full payment and more. I'm well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, acceptable and pleasing to God. For my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus, so that to our God and Father be glory forever and ever. Amen." And so my concluding thoughts are this. I'm grateful for what God has done in providing us with you and so many like you, and for the way that you give. I want to be representative of all the other people who lose loved ones or who go through trials and tribulations and difficulties. And I want to give voice to those who oftentimes will never say what they're feeling when you go to them. I want you to know that what you've done for us, for my family, for me, has made a tremendous impact and difference. Yes, I'm still hurting and I'm still sad and I'm still confused and there's still things that I don't know how they're going to work out. And no, I don't have my focus and I'm not okay. All that's true. I don't need you or me to fix me. And if you hug me or if you say something to me or if you mention death, I'm not going to break. Neither will anybody else. We're always afraid of triggering something or doing something. Don't worry about it. It's all good. Have a good spirit. Mean well. Let God lead you, and whatever comes will be fine. Really. I want to give voice to that. I want you to know that all of the hurting people that you encounter and that you minister to, like me, this is what they're experiencing. This is why it matters. You say, "Well, I never know what to say." You don't need to know what to say. It doesn't matter what you say. Nobody's listening to what you say anyway. When you're in the midst of a crisis like that, you don't think about what people say. You think about who you see. You think about what you receive. You think about just that relationship. It's okay. I want to give voice to all of those folks who never say thank you because they don't know how. And I want to say thank you, and I wish that I could do it more eloquently. Words are kind of my thing, and so I should have something that would just flow off of the tongue and would be really high-minded, and maybe if I could add a British accent, it would really... It'd have to be southern Great Britain, I think, but... but I don't. So just as plainly and as commonly as I can, I thank you for your grace, your love, your giving, all the things that you've done. I want you to know that it does make a difference. It really does. And then I want to say to you, as we walk the path together, none of us will be the same. We're all going to be a little different now. But that's not bad. I don't see that as a bad thing. I don't necessarily see it as an easy thing, and I'm not suggesting that for a moment, but it's not a bad thing. Because here's what I know. When I think about my mom today, I think about the fact that her fingers are all straight. And I think about the fact that all of those joints that have been replaced over the years, more of them false now and are synthetic than the ones God made. Now they're all the ones that God gave her. She's a lot taller today. My mom was a pretty tall woman, but her illness had made her shorter. I think about the fact that my mom has her mind again with the perfection and clarity of eternity, and I'm okay knowing that she's not here, but knowing that she is there and has that. I'm grateful for all of the hope and the peace and the promise that comes with the awareness that she is with the Lord. And it's not some sort of Pollyanna approach to denying my reality. I really, really do believe that what the Bible says is true. I really do. And just as I have said when I have preached those funerals for your loved ones and declared them to be with the Lord, I also believe it to be true in my own setting. Perhaps more than ever before. I'm not clinging to it as a vain hope. I'm clinging to it because I believe this is what's true. Will it be okay? It's okay now. It's not going to be okay. I'm not going to be okay. I'm okay now. It's just that being okay right now isn't all that great. So it's a little messed up. But that's how it's supposed to be, right? I think so. My next step comes this week. And so on Thursday, we're going to go to Kathy's folks, and Dad's going to stay and go with us, and we're going to have Thanksgiving together. Of course, he knows her parents, not just from being acquaintance, but he was their pastor at Maplewood. And so they have a long relationship. So it'll be good. Good to have everybody together. And then on Friday, he's going to go home. And so that'll be my next step. Because I am really worried about him. But I can't fix him either. God knows I've tried. But I can't do it. It's okay. Somebody asked me the other day, "You think he'll be okay?" I don't think he will. I don't think he will. And what's weird is I think that's okay. Because what people mean when they say, "You think he's going to be okay, is he going to be like he was?" He's never going to be like he was. He can't be. He's been married to that woman for, would have been in December, 59 years. It's a long time. He's been taking care of her for 57. But even though he's not going to be like he was, he'll be all right. He said to me when we were very young, I was 18, I don't know how old he was. He was a young, strong man, though. He was a bull. And I told him to his face, "You're not going to tell me what to do anymore, old man." That went really well, by the way. And and the next thing I said was, as he had his forearm pinned against my throat on the wall, "I don't care what you do to me." Truth is, I did care. Because I thought he was going to kill me. And he probably should have. But I remember when that happened, my mother storming into the room and saying, "You too, enough." And it was like a switch went off. And his anger just shut off. And mine was shame. I always had shame when she spoke to me. He had fear. Don't understand it. It makes absolutely no sense. But when she said that, enough, he stopped. I stepped back, put my head down. And then she said, "Both of you to your rooms." And that's what we did. We went to our rooms, grumbling all the way down the hallway like two brothers. And then she gave us time. And first she went to him, and I could hear her. That's all I could hear through the wall. I don't know what she was saying. I could just hear the tone. And he would go, "But," and the "but," and then "but," and she would just cut him off. I don't know what she said to him. I asked her. She wouldn't tell me. And then she came in, and I know he was listening to her do the same thing to me. And then she made us come back together, and she made us shake hands, and she made us love and hug one another and get over it. I'll never forget that. That was a day that could have gone either way. I could have ended up steeped in the rebellion that I had already embraced, running not only from God, but now from my parents as well. But for my mother, who with a gnarled set of hands, unable to open the jar or a bottle of water, and knees that had been replaced, and hips that had been worked on, and shoulders that had been replaced, and all this stuff, my broken little mother, with a voice as clear and strong as thunder itself, said, "Enough." I worry about my dad, because I wonder, is the memory of that voice going to be enough? I have to believe it will be, because it does a lot for me right now. So we're going to be okay. We are now okay. We're just different. But we're going to be good, and we'll get through it, and here's why. Because of God's grace, that is always enough. And because of God's glory that stands above it all. And because of the love and the grace that you have given that shines through. So what I have said to you today, this is what every one of you who has experienced what I am has felt from others. And this is the encouragement to us all to keep doing it. When you think of Thanksgiving, it's not about turkey and dressing and roof over your head and anything else. Those are material things. They come and go. Your gratitude is for grace, for relationship, for love. You look around the room, you remember the people. You think about who isn't there, and you realize the change that that's made in you. And you understand that through all those cycles and circles of life, God has been the same. And he has been making you into who he wants you to be. This is who he wants me to be today. And I'm good with that. I'm grateful for it.